Francis Hoare. Francis, I don't think we've ever spoken before. I know we've spoken about you. Are you with us?
I'm with you.
Perfect. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
So
I had a slight problem with the timing. I had a bit of a confusion, but fortunately, somebody called me just now, so it's all fine.
Okay, great. So what's it like in Great Britain? Is it similar to what we just heard from our colleague from Italy?
I think it's really difficult to compare, but because you can only read about what's happening elsewhere. So I suppose best to give my impression. We're on this sort of what's called steps regulations, and by October last year, the government, for the first time, in what I thought was a very concerning development, adopted this stage one, stage two, stage three lockdown, which then they called something different, but now they're calling it the steps regulations, and the whole idea of that is you're stepping out of lockdown. But I've always thought that that was a particularly pernicious institution, the stages of lockdown, because it was done to indicate that this was a normal way of living and a normal way of states regulating their citizens. So we saw it in South Africa, in Australia and New Zealand and so on. And obviously it isn't. And obviously it's utterly unprecedented. But it normalizes the idea that you can regulate with whom you can meet in your own house, whether you can go outside and so on, and all that kind of stuff. And suggests that it's fine because you can have a lower level of lockdown when there's certain levels of risk. But anyway, we're in that situation. The media is little better, if not worse than in Italy and in most other places. The judiciary is worse than in most of Europe, certainly, much worse than in the United States, where we've seen quite a lot of quite good judgments. I'm thinking of whether it was Wyoming or there was one excellent Supreme Court of one of the states in the United States, and there was an excellent judgment in Weimar recently. Of course, two of those, January and the mask one recently. The judicial decisions that in my cases and in other cases that we've had in England, Wales, and to a lesser extent in Scotland, because fewer cases have been brought to different legal jurisdiction in Scotland, have been very bad indeed. I'm just looking at the major case that I did with Simon Dolan as the claimant, which challenged the whole initial lockdown, the lawfulness of it. I'm just looking at the judgment now, and the key elements of that were, one, that the judiciary just dismissed with very poor reasoning the idea that the Act of Parliament. So we have a system called secondary legislation. So we have, as you know, we have Acts of Parliament which are unimpeachable by the courts because we don't have a written unified constitution. But those Acts of Parliament can give ministers the power to introduce legislation. And that's what they did through the lockdown. So the Act of Parliament that's being used in England and Wales and in Scotland Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland as well is called the Public Health Control of Disease Act 1984. That was amended in 2008 to introduce some changes and regulations that could be introduced that came from the International Health Regulations 2005. Now, as you may know, the International Health Regulations 2005 gave a number of different recommendations to national governments, none of which were anything close to envisaging lockdowns. There was suggestion about international travel being regulated, perhaps closure of certain events and so on. And I think viewers will be aware that the pandemic planning in different countries has been never envisaged before 2020, anything of the sort the sort of behaviour that governments and the sort of legislation that have been introduced in 2020. And that goes right as far as the WHO pandemic plan in 2019, which was very, very far away from even considering anything like this. So I mentioned that because one of the things the court took into account is that in 2008, the intention of Parliament was to introduce the IHR, the International Health Regulations. But in fact, the international health regulations say nothing. There's nothing like this. I won't go into the details. I don't have time. But the parts of the Act of Parliament that gave ministers the power to regulate were specifically dealing with those people who were suspected of being, who may be infectious. And it's something the Court of Appeal completely ignored in their judgment, that the key criterion for imposing these regulations was that they could be imposed on people who may be infected. And that's a key point that Lord Sumption, who viewers may recognise the name, he's been very vocal and extremely eloquent in speaking out against this. He's a retired Supreme Court judge. He has made the observation that the Court of Appeal were wrong, and not only were they wrong, the judgment was woefully thin in terms of its reasoning. Very concerningly too, the judgment, I think we'll all be aware in Europe and to a certain extent in the common law world as well, of the proportionality test, which is prominent in all jurisdictions that have connections to the European Convention of Human Rights, but is also applied, whether it's called that or not, throughout the common law world. Reading the Dolan judgment, it's unrecognisable to anyone who considers proportionality. Because essentially the court says that because the government is acting on the basis of evidence that it has considered, it may impose regulations, even regulations that were never envisaged before 2020 and are the most extreme deprivations of freedoms that we've ever encountered in England and Wales. And that including the protectorate under Cromwell and the middle, even to some extent the Middle Ages. We've never had a period where everyone in England was told that they had to stay in their houses and so on. And this will be the same in most other countries in the world. So I heard Renard was talking about the unwillingness of courts to consider evidence, and the Court of Appeal refused to even give permission to review the proportionality of the original lockdown regulations. It gave no regard whatsoever to the evidence. And you might think that for the proportionality test to be engaged in positive ways, in ways that justify the type of legislation that we've had, you must surely be able to be satisfied that the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, and more so where the fundamental rights are so important and the economic and healthcare devastation of the policy being implemented, in this case lockdowns, and medium types of lockdowns, or regulations falling short of lockdowns, the balancing exercise must be struck. Reading that judgment, it's a pretty extraordinary and extremely poor set of reasoning from very senior judges in England and Wales that ignore that. And in fact, interestingly, the three cases in the Supreme Court, which are binding on the Court of Appeal, the Supreme Court's the court that brings together United Kingdom, so the jurisdictions of Northern Ireland, Scotland and England and Wales all feed into the Supreme Court. It's not quite a constitutional court, and it can't strike down acts of parliament. It can strike down secondary legislation like this, though. But three important...
It includes Gibraltar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, but in a slightly different way. Mm. So there's the Privy Council, which is effectively the same judges, and they deal with appeals from the Caribbean, some independent countries with the Queen as head of state, and some overseas territories such as Gibraltar, St. Helena, Falkland Islands, and so on. Yeah, they're effectively the same judges.
Lord Sumption was very outspoken. Has he toned down his rhetoric lately, or
no.
Is... Oh, good, good.
No, he hasn't. He wrote another excellent article in the Daily Telegraph, or possibly the Sunday Telegraph this weekend. No, he hasn't toned down his rhetoric or his analysis, nor has he changed it. He's been consistently speaking against lockdowns in a way that most... Again, I go back to the point, as we'll all recognise, that essentially what we're doing is talking about things, the conception of law and proportionality and rationality, frankly, that anyone would have believed or claimed to have believed before 2020, when they became terrified by a virus with an IFR of maybe 0.25%, an average age of death of 82, and so on. All those statistics we're all too familiar with.
You know, the thing is that we're hearing from our colleagues in Canada in particular, because they're pretty experienced in the meantime, that the balancing, the proportionality, in effect, doesn't play a role anymore. I mean, they pretend that they're weighing the pros and cons of all these approaches, but they're not really, because everything is being overridden by what they now call the precautionary principle. And I think that's what it sounds like that's happening in England as well.
Going back to the Dolan judgment in England, that's very much what happened. One of the elements of the lockdown that we were challenging was the decision by the government to elevate 5 tests, which all related to the virus, above any other considerations. And the government expressly said on a number of occasions that it would only reduce the restrictions if each or some of those 5 tests were met, none of which related to economic activity, none of it related to health or anything else other than the virus, even though it was pretty obvious to anyone with a rational mind that the virus was least of our concerns when it came to the economic and social catastrophe that was being caused by the lockdowns. Mm-hmm. But so they didn't even allow for a weighing process, a balancing process. And the Court of Appeal, extraordinarily, said that that was acceptable because the government can decide what factors it takes into account, completely ignoring, again, all the precedent, which says that, of course, when it's taking away fundamental rights, it has to balance the advantages against the disadvantages and it has to consider evidence. And they also used some cases such as smoking cases and smoking advertising cases, which involve extremely niche areas of public policy, where the courts are understandably very unwilling to intervene. Some of the cases were referred to by the governments involved fisheries, for example. Yeah. So a scientific advisor advising on fisheries. In those cases, obviously, the courts have said that they will not intervene unless there's a very clearly irrational statement by a scientist or whatever, obviously. But in this case, we're talking about locking people in their houses, or not quite, but regulating who they can meet, closing down businesses and so on. It's totally unprecedented. And it's the most extraordinary and appalling judgment I've read in practically all my years practicing law, unfortunately, the case I was in. But that's where we are in England, Wales, Scotland, and pretty much Scotland and Northern Ireland, which haven't even had the kind of challenges that we've had in England.
Are there lawyers who are trying to attack at the very foundation of what's going on? Meaning, are people trying to attack the reliability of the PCR tests? Because without the PCR tests, there wouldn't be any lockdowns.
Very, very interesting. And what we've been trying to look at is finding a set of circumstances which allow, because Renata made a very good point just now, which is that you need to find the right case with which to challenge the PCR tests. In Portugal, they had a habeas corpus case, effectively. They said that the detention of people in hotel quarantine beyond a certain point was unlawful because the basis on which they were doing it was that they were infected, and they were basing that on a PCR test. So they had the jurisdiction to do that. It is possible to find similar circumstances in England, because there are circumstances where hotel quarantine can continue beyond a certain point. But it's difficult. And the courts have found that the self-isolation in your own house is not detention. In fact, in a case that I'm dealing with at the moment, dealing with self-isolation requirements for travellers from non-red list countries, so where we're not imposing hotel quarantine, there's an imposition of 10 days at home. And there's a case before the Court of Appeal where I'm representing somebody who was subject to that last year. It's taken a very long time to get to the High Court, and now it's in the Court of Appeal, or we're waiting for the Court of Appeal to decide whether it hears it. In that case, the judge found that it wasn't detention when you were required to be in your own house, even though the European jurisdiction, the European convention case law suggests that that is a form of house arrest. So, and they also said, yeah.
I would suggest.
So it's about finding the. But unless you have detention, you're not going to be able to challenge the PCR test because you challenge detention on the basis that you're being detained because of the risk that you hold, because you are infected or infectious. And as a result.
That's funny because the PCR testing is the only way, the Drosten PCR test is the only way that any of these governments decide whether or not there are too many infections. So if it turns out, and we know this is the case because we've spoken to all of these experts, if it turns out that the Drosten PCR test cannot tell you anything about infections, then the whole house of cards must collapse.
But it's as Renata said, it's finding a way of challenging, getting the courts, forcing the courts really to analyse it. So judicial review, which is the form of challenge of public law, so laws, secondary legislation, and the acts of government. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to challenge the use of a PCR test in judicial review because the standard is very high. It's very difficult for claimants to succeed in judicial reviews because government gets a lot of latitude. But if you're talking about detention, that requires evidence that somebody is infectious. So then you can challenge the PCR test, which is why the Portuguese claim worked as a way of doing that.
Well, the Austrian court didn't need detention. The Austrian court just asked for the foundation and found this is unconstitutional because there's no factual basis for any of these measures. The other question, of course, is does the government take its court's decisions seriously? And they don't in Austria, not yet. And here in Germany, the same kinds of efforts can be seen. It is so that the government tries everything it can to put everyone under a lot of pressure, including the judges, of course, who are not in line. And I'm afraid what they're trying to do right now is they're trying to impose the British legal thinking, as you explained it right now, onto our German system, which is completely different, at least as far as the procedural law is concerned. Substantive law is in many cases similar. But Francis, I don't want to cut you off, but we're under a tight schedule.
Yeah, I know.
Just a couple.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Just one. Do you also have the testing problem in the schools, like for instance, right now?
Yeah, we do.
And also,
we have testing in school. We have masks in school. In fact, my latest case issued today is a challenge to a school imposing a mask policy, and the idea of that is for it to be a test case, and we're examining the efficacy of masks and the harm that they cause to children, and we're asking for the court to injunct that school trust and prevent them from imposing this mask policy on schools. But they also impose testing, so there is also testing in schools. Yes, it's not compulsory, but it's obviously there's a lot of coercion on children who don't do it, and parents.
Are you aware that we have this, an expert, this Gutachten from
expert opinion
already on the masks? Are you aware of this?
Yeah.
We could.
Yeah.
You're aware of the German decision, the very recent German decision.
The Weimar. We're relying on the Weimar decision. Yes, we were relying on that. Absolutely. In fact, we need an official translation. That's another question for another time, but. Yes, we have a reasonably good translation of it so far, and we'll get the full official one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thank you for explaining what's going on in Great Britain. It's eye-opening to a degree, because on the one hand, it shows how this is really an agenda that is being pushed in lockstep everywhere. But there are slight differences, and those differences are important because I can see now I understand what they're trying to do here with the judiciary. They're trying to put the judiciary under the same kinds of legal constraints that you have there without them existing here in this country. It's very interesting to see this. It kind of uncovers their tracks. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Francis. We'll be in touch.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.